Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day, thanks to Vanessa from Banksia, and I am Rob Jan.
And Megan McHugh.
And welcome aboard the Starship Zero-G, science fiction, fantasy, and historical radio for episode number 1595. Crypto, I have a feeling we're not in Clark's Kansas anymore. Our podcast title is Supod Girl. I'm reaching. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of the Wurundjeri, especially in this Nidoc week, from which we broadcast from and to elders past, present, and future. And now we're going to go straight into a track from the Supergirl television series by Blake Neely. And this is the most recent one, which was part of the Arrowverse, just to set the scene here, just a little bit, you know.
Hello, this is Wendy Padbury. I played Zoe Harriet on Doctor Who and Sue Craig on Freewheelers. You're listening to Zero G on 3RRFM. Zero G? Well, I'm quite sure that doesn't add up.
Yeah, there we had Blake Neely's theme for the Supergirl television series. You know, the one that was from the Arrowverse.
Yes, yes.
And that's because we're going to talk about Supergirl later in today, but we're going to start with an audiobook.
Yes. First of all, we're going to delve into the depths of a dungeon. So I didn't manage to upgrade to X-ray vision like the Kryptonian, sadly, but I did upgrade recently to normal person vision from a glasses wearer, and I got laser eye surgery. And so obviously for recovery time, I was heavily reliant on audio entertainment, and I thought, okay, I've got to pick a good audiobook, and one that had been kind of kicking about and had been recommended and sort of has a bit of hype at the moment is called Dungeon Crawler Carl. So Dungeon Crawler Carl, it's actually a book series, so I'm coming in sort of late. We've already got 8 books that have been released to date. And part of the reason why I chose this is the books are written by Matt Dinneman. And they are published sort of using, like, in the publishing industry by Ace Books, which is an imprint of Penguin. But Dinneman actually did self-publish these originally on Amazon. So he started writing these, self-published them, and then they did get picked up for traditional publishing. And in addition to the ebooks and hard copy books, the Audible, it's specifically an Audible one, audiobook, which has been narrated by Jeff Hayes, and he sort of does all these different voices for all the different characters, has been quite well regarded and is pretty popular. So I think Dinneman himself has said that the sales for the audiobook for Dungeon Crawler Carl do exceed the sales for like the ebook and the book. So it's like a very well-known kind of popular audiobook version of these books. So I was like, okay, let's jump on this craze. Let's see what this is all about. Because originally, as I mentioned, it was self-published, but now, like, I think all the books together have sold like 10 million copies, like millions and millions of copies. And there are 8 books in the series, as I mentioned, with the most recent one released only a couple of months ago. So Dungeon Crawler Carl, it falls into this sort of area of literature, which I haven't really read anything of before and am not as familiar with, that's called Lit RPG. So that's basically a literary role-playing game is what it stands for. So it's like an RPG game world, but it's told narratively like a science fiction or fantasy novel. So it is still a novel, but the way the story and the adventure unfold, it really focuses on elements of an RPG, like the hero will have different stats and stat points, things like charisma, strength, intelligence, etc., that are key to and part of the storytelling. So if you're a fan of like tabletop RPGs or game RPGs, this is just another way to experience like a role-playing game type of narrative in the form of a book.
Is it like a choose-your-own-adventure book in a way?
So it is does differ from that in that it's not actually gamified. So there's no sort of elements where you take part in the story the way you would with maybe tabletop or a video game. It's much more like they're using the structures of those kinds of storytelling to as a way to frame and tell a novel, like a narrative literature story.
Hmm.
So that's what's quite interesting about it. And it does mean it can be very, very immersive, but I'll get to a little bit later about maybe some of the limitations of this kind of approach. So Dungeon Crawler Carl, I have listened to the first book and I've started the second book. And just to give you sort of a quick log line of it, it's a bit like Hunger Games meets Dungeons and Dragons meets Running Man. And of course, I mean, it's very popular and it's already been commissioned, or the rights have been taken on for a TV adaptation, which Seth MacFarlane of like Family Guy and whatnot is okay. working on. So, you know, that all checks out. So I'll tell you a little bit about our story. So Earth is in trouble. In the dark of one fateful night, every single building and structure is completely flattened, which wipes out a huge chunk of Earth's population. So not only that, but these strange entrances appear all around the world at different locations.
Mm-hmm.
And these entrances lead down into an 18-level dungeon, so like a game dungeon, oh. which has been built and conceived of by a nefarious alien corporation that has taken control of the Earth to mine its resources and use them to repurpose into this game dungeon. So any human who ventures inside will have to defeat these unique levels of the dungeon, of which there are 18 levels, with the adventures of these, they call them crawlers, their adventures broadcast to audiences across the galaxy for their bloodthirsty enjoyment. So people, you know, so the humans will go into this dungeon and not only do they have to survive, but their exploits are broadcast as this reality show called Dungeon Crawler World for the appetite of intergalactic species across the galaxy. So with very few options left besides starving on the surface of the Earth, our hero Carl of the title ventures into the dungeon. And this is where I think, Rob, this is going to be so up your alley. Accompanied by only his ex-girlfriend's sassy former show cat, Princess Donut. Full name, Grand Champion, Breed Winner Regional, National Winner, Princess Donut, the Queen Anne Chunk. So once inside, Carl becomes one of these crawlers. So, you know, a player in this game.
Mm-hmm.
One of only, so, you know, several million humans kind of enter the dungeon. Not all, you know, this number starts to go down quite rapidly, quite quickly. But these people need to now learn how to survive, learn the rules of the game and so on. And so there's things to help out with this, like tutorial guides and such. And that's all kind of part of the narrative story. And this quest becomes both much easier and kind of harder once Princess Donut, the cat, eats this enhanced pet biscuit, which allows her to talk and participate in the game as well. I think we saw that coming, right? Talking cat, obviously.
Yes.
So she fights by Carl's side as the two come up against all manner of crazy dungeon foes, and as well as Borant Corporation, which is kind of the overseer of this dungeon, themselves. So throughout the book, it's the adventures of, well, throughout the series, it's the adventures of Carl and Donut fighting these monsters and bosses, meeting other non-player characters, friends and foes, other crawlers. And, you know, they've got to build up their skills and their loot and try to make it to the next level of the dungeon. If that's not all, it's obviously there's a time pressure because there's this 18 levels of the dungeon. They don't know what's in store for them. The first book covers levels 1 and 2. But within X number of days or X period of time, the current level collapses. So you have to make it. You have to progress within this time frame. And if that's not all, because it's being broadcast, they also need to be appealing and get followers and viewers. Because if you get sponsors, then you will be able, they will maybe give you things that will help you in the game or you know, advantageous loot or something like that. So it does, it is helpful if you are good to watch, appealing to the audience. So there's a lot to think about. And that's kind of the way our story plays out. And so in the first, as I mentioned, the first book is levels 1 and 2. And we start to see, yeah, like some really great world building, I think. Like it starts to, you know, it talks a lot about kind of the procedural around why these kinds of the dungeon exists and how it fits into like a bigger galactic ploy and all these interdimensional other factors, and you know, Carl and Donut learn more and more, but it's very well done and very well paced out. And like I said, I'm at the start of book two, and this is where they're starting to do things like you choose a race and you choose a class, and so the game elements will start to, I think, be more and more incorporated. But
is there a dungeon master?
So there is a system AI. Yeah. So in the game, the system AI is kind of controlling bits and pieces because, as you know, told as part of the story, it is very much like there's descriptions of the game mechanics, there's safe rooms, there's game menus that they can access and see things like their inventory and their skill set, their stat points, and mm-hmm. find out information. And they get loot boxes for doing different achievements. And so all of that is kind of run by the system AI. So that's kind of when you think about if you're playing a video game, I guess that would be sort of, yeah, people programming it. So the system AI is helping with that.
I can imagine in the book that this would be, there'd be charts and stats and stuff sort of breaking out.
Yeah, this is what I'm curious about.
But how
about.
Does it work in the Audible?
It's quite well done, actually. So they'll just say, you know, Donut opened her silver loot box and inside was a tiara that gave her X stat points and whatnot. And then it will, there's also an in-game chat. There's different ways that it will describe what the characters are seeing in the menu. So it's quite descriptive in that way. And I think that's what helps with you being quite immersed. And I found it to be quite an immersive listening experience, not just because Jeff Hayes, who does the audiobook, is really great at doing all the different voices, but I think it is very descriptive and goes quite in detail into different elements of how this whole thing runs and exactly what Carl and Donut have at their disposal. And you can start to see the little hints of, you know, sort of how things might unfold as they hopefully progress more and more, which I'm assuming they do because there's 8 books so far.
Yeah.
I did find, I mean, the downside to that maybe is by the end of the first book, listening to it, it was starting to get a little repetitive because, as you can imagine, there's a lot of grinding against these foes in the dungeon, and then there's different bosses that they fight. And they got to a point where it's, the describing, okay, we did this, we need to get through this to get to the next level. And by that point, I was a little bit ready for a new story. But, I mean, I think Dinnerman did pace it well because then the book ends and then book two starts there in a brand new level, which does seem so far to me to be very different to the previous two. And then we've got the added element of now they're getting some new skills and things because they've picked a class. So a lot of this, I'm using so much jargon, but I guess the key thing to say is that it's really guiding you through this experience of a story that's based around the elements of an RPG. So, you know, if you feel like that's something that you would enjoy, it is kind of like watching someone play a video game.
Yeah, watching someone stream when they...
And the story unfolds, but it's done in this more literary way. And there are story arcs and things, and it becomes quite meta because obviously the story arc of the book, they talk about it like a story arc of the show as well that's being broadcast and how that all plays out. So it is interesting. I think what kind of gives this sort of a step above... Well, maybe one of the reasons it's so popular is the way it uses humor. Like, it's very much comedic. Like, there's a lot of jokes and little, yeah, just really uses comedy as a key way to make different commentary on the dystopian themes of the book. So it's not just like a bog standard dungeon story. From the very beginning, we can kind of see some themes of class come out, and just the way Dinnerman has conceived of the first few levels, I can kind of see the cogs turning of maybe what we're in store for later in the story. Some characters are introduced that give hints of maybe broader class themes being talked about later, or power structures, things like that. And of course, it's a thing of you're going down in the dungeons, but it's you're working your way. I mean, there's a very obvious kind of parallel with working your way from like a working class, and then later levels, I think there's a lot of prince. They talk about royal families and things like that. So I think I'd be intrigued to see how it builds on some of the themes that it's already started to introduce, and if it keeps holding on to immersive and interesting storylines because there's a lot of action going on. There's a few twists and turns as well, which I think are really great breadcrumbs to just keep people going. And like I said, I think people enjoy it because it's funny. It's quite funny. Carl's a really funny character. His kind of rapport with Donut is great. Donut is, she's sassy. She's, you know, princess cat vibe. And as they get more and more power as well and different skills, they've got very different builds, I guess you would call it. So Carl's very much like punching. He's like a tank. He crushes things. He fights up close. Whereas Donut, I don't think this is a spoiler, but like she gets very early on a power where she just shoots lasers from her eyes.
What a great story for you to read when you're recovering.
I know. I was like, where's my magic missile lasers from my eyes? So I think the way that's all done, it's he knows what we want to read. I think it's very much in tune to what is fun for an audience, for a reader, the kind of adventure story, the kind of parties and the kind of adventures we want to see people have and the heroes that we want to root for. And there's helpers along the way too that pop up and, like I said, little breadcrumbs of mysteries that I want to find out more about. So overall, great audiobook, very much enjoyed it. I am going to continue. I don't know whether I'll continue listening or reading or both, but it is nice to know there's more adventures for me to continue with in the story. It will be interesting to see if I get fatigued of the style of the RPG writing. But overall, I just think it's a lot of fun. It's a hell of a time.
and just for the listeners, what it is it?
Oh, yes. So just confirming with you, it is Dungeon Crawler Carl series. The first book is called Dungeon Crawler Carl. The rest have all different names, but I usually just look up Dungeon Crawler Carl book 2, book 3, book whatever. But yeah, Dungeon Crawler Carl series by Matt Dinnerman. I do recommend the audiobook by Jeff Hayes. I mean, unfortunately, it is an Audible kind of locked thing. So sometimes I get audiobooks from the library and things like that. So I don't think you can access that version of it, unfortunately, but I do think as well on Kindle, like the ebooks are quite cheap because, like I said, he self-published them and stuff, so it is fairly accessible if you just want the books. But I do recommend the audiobook experience, and I think they've also done something that's a bit more theatrical with like music and stuff as well. But I just listened to kind of the available audiobook and quite enjoyed it. So yeah, Dungeon Crawler Carl, thumbs up. I can report back once I've gotten further into the stories, if it holds up or not. But
it's such a big field, isn't it? Spin-off gaming novels.
Yeah, yeah. I think from my understanding too, like Dinnerman does, because it's such a, he's very involved with fans of the series and does take kind of suggestions for the kinds of things people want to see. Like, and there's a lot of funny opportunities for different bits of loot or different skills or you know.
Do they roll multi-sided die?
No, so it's all organized through the system AI. So yeah, it's interesting to see it kind of, yeah. So it's just them adventuring, fighting, meeting people, making their way through. They'll have different like magic vests equipped or like different weapons they'll come across, and all via this kind of loot box system.
I've had some fun with gaming novels over the years. I mean, you've got the difficulty that you're supplanting the interactive, unless it's a you know, a choose your own adventure one. You're substituting that interactive element, which is so key to playing a game, obviously, for text.
You're so right. Like, I think there's an art to making a story that people want to go along with when they can't be as involved in the direction of where it's going to go. So, yeah, I do recommend it. It kept me great company while I was unable to see.
Having your origin story.
Yes, exactly.
As an X-Man.
Power's yet to come in, sadly. But, yeah, Dungeon Crawler Carl. And we have there's a lot of kind of fan music. A lot of it leads a bit like EDM and things, but we do have something semi-related to play.
Yeah, this is by Tame Impala. And, of course, it's from the most recent motion picture Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, which I thought was a great film.
So I feel sad that it didn't seem to be as kind of popular as what I think it should be.
Yeah, and this is Wings of Time. If I've got it set up correctly.
This is Kylie Chan, author of the Dark Heavens and Journey to Wudang trilogies, and you're listening to Zero G on 3RRR FM.
Yeah, and we had there Tame Impala giving us a bit from the Dungeons and Dragons movie Wings of Time.
In celebration of the review I just did of Dungeon Crawler Carl, a lit RPG out now as ebook, physical book, and audiobook.
You know, I would I would actually buy a Chris Pine Troubadour spin-off album of the songs
from
that.
Yeah, like his bard, little bard. Yeah. I think much beloved character, that one.
I've got a message on the chat line saying, if I had a tame impala, I would call it Vlad. All right, so moving along to Supergirl, the new movie in cinemas now. The second of the freshly rebooted DC Universe films under the overwatch of DC Studios co-heads James Gunn and Peter Safran. Mm-hmm. Supergirl, created by Otto Binder and Al Plastino in Action Comics back in May 1959. Mm-hmm. Traveling the same road of spinning off a female variant of an existing male hero. Mm. You know, it's like She-Hulk and Lady Bullseye.
Just copy-paste that.
Wonder Woman. Mm. Doesn't mean anything necessarily for their future longevity or how they're going to play out. So Kryptonian-descended Kara Zor-El slash Supergirl. Her father was Kal-El's father's brother. So, Superman is Kara's cousin.
Yep.
Now, Kara's dad listened to his brother's projections of planet Krypton's imminent destruction from its core detonating, and he protected his own hometown, Argo City, with a powerful force field that saved his own family and a substantial number of fellow Kryptonians. Okay. Inside information. So, they escaped death temporarily, but not in the long term, sadly. Okay. Doomed because of reasons.
Yeah.
Now, Zor-El copied his brother and sent his daughter to Earth to save her when Argo eventually started dying. And Kara arrived on Earth, became superpowered under the yellow sun and was adopted by Earth humans and assumed the adopted identity of Linda Lee Danvers.
Oh.
So part of the...
Okay.
Perhaps not part of Captain Marvel's family, but, you know. And she became part of the growing number of super family members, which really became quite bloated. There was her and Superman, and then there was a super horse and Crypto. There was a super ape. And, and it just got way out of control.
Of super animals, right?
So when they did this reboot of the DC Universe, one of the many, they killed her off in 1985. And then later on reintroduced the character back in 2004. In between, well, not quite, in 1984, there was a Supergirl movie with Helen Slater. Pretty ordinary movie overall, bombed, and the Salkinds, who were in charge of the Superman franchise at the time for the movies, they sold the rights off to another bunch of producers.
Is that the one where she gets trapped in that? Invisible.
Oh, yeah. She goes off to the Phantom Zone for a bit.
I had that. I taped that off the TV. I had that on VHS at home. I've watched that many, many times.
It's got Helen Slater in it, and she actually is quite good in the role. It's sort of an Andrewine role of coming to Earth and not knowing what's going on.
And isn't there like a bit of a sweaty love interest who ends up... I remember that.
And it's got Peter O'Toole in it. Sort of like
of course.
Gratuitously.
Yes. Oh, my first coming across Peter O'Toole.
Playing an irresponsible inventor, basically.
That's right. Yes. It's all coming back to me.
Yeah. And there's magic involved in it too.
I mean, I can see now, looking back, it was not, you know, I can see why it didn't do necessarily that well, but, fun.
Which is such a pity because, as we've discussed before, they've got... Supergirl, Superman, there was some other things that they were experimenting with. The Wonder Woman series from the late 70s.
They
were coming up to Michael Keaton playing Batman. There could have been a Justice League. I think there was actually a one-episode, one-off special where there was actually a Justice League.
People just didn't think about it that way. I think now in the age of Marvel we forget that...
Instantly.
It wasn't always about that kind of crossover, I guess. But anyway...
So, okay, we had that movie in 1984. Then there was a big I thought it was big for a show set in Smallville. I thought it was a pretty good big Superman sort of series or Superboy from 2001 to 2011 where Melissa Benoist played Supergirl.
Yep.
And for me, the first of the tall buildings this new movie has to leap in a single bound is the trickiest.
Yeah.
Long-term comic book fan that I am, it's – Not that there's too much big and small screen superhero action. Mm. Even for me, it is a lot. but I deal with not managing to see them all, just as I don't read anywhere near all the comic books.
Yeah.
Now, the first jump for me is that there are simply recently too many different actors playing Supergirl. Even with the get-out-of-jail-free card of some being multiversal variants, I find it a little bewildering. The same applies to Batman and Superman, really.
I mean, Superman, for sure, I think, has maybe the most recent memory iterations.
I'm jittery getting my head around all the reboots and all the re-origin stories.
So,
in 2023, Sasha Kaye played Supergirl on an alternate Earth in the Flash movie.
Yes.
One of the last of the DC Extended Universe films. Yeah. Alongside this, from 2016 to 2021, across six seasons of a successful live-action television series, as we said, Melissa Benoist played Supergirl, which plugged into the so-called Arrowverse in DC's, I think, best maintained, sustained universe on any size screen. And I looked at the numbers on this. It encompassed six TV shows and two web series. That's 700 episodes around about that in all across 37 seasons. That's major.
It is. I mean, I just don't know that many people who watched that Arrowverse stuff, like the super. And I think there was like a Lois and Clark, like a Clark and.
I'm not sure if that's something different.
Oh, different again.
Sort of related.
Yeah.
So there's all of that. And if you go to video games or animated entries, you'll run into another set of actors voicing Supergirl, including, just as an aside, no less than Summer Glau. Just saying that even as a comic book fan, used to frequent swaps of writing and art teams across runs of titles, it's a bit much.
Yeah.
You can contrast that with Marvel's fairly even commitment to having the same actors mostly stick with their roles, and they'll often even voice their characters in some animated shows, like the recent What If. And oddly, I don't have the same problem with the now vast array of screen Spider-Men, maybe because they've lent into that in cheeky ways, and it's sort of like Spider-Man works like that.
They're more discreet as well, I think. I don't know. Yeah. There's something where they just seem like such clear errors to me, like of those Spider-Men.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you're right. They all become one towards the end.
And then you have
there.
This, like, you know, the animated Spider-Man movies. And
yeah.
Billions of Spider-Man.
That's true. But I think the animated element, again, sets it apart. I think Superman, for me, is the main one where you're like, we have just had so many runs at that character.
And at least when you change, like when you change Captain America's, you're not actually changing the actor playing Steve Rogers.
No.
You're playing, changing the Captain America character.
Itself, yes.
I think writing all that down sort of let me have a sort of cleansing breath.
So how did you feel then sitting down to watch this latest?
Well, after having written that, I put all the other Supergirls out of my brainiac and I got on with the film before me. So let's just put a cap on that and we'll have a track here from the Supergirl movie from the 1980s. And this is Jerry Goldsmith, no less.
Loves the Superman. Loves the Super Score.
Well, actually, it's mostly John Williams up until a certain point, but here we've got Jerry Goldsmith, so to set it apart. And this is the main title in Argo City from the 1984 Supergirl movie.
He's a sick man. This is where sick people come.
0G is fun, as you were.
Yeah, Jerry Goldsmith, no less, there with...
What a fun little score.
Supergirl from 1984 and a little bit at the end there of Argo City, just giving that sort of majestic, this is an impressive Kryptonian city sort of thing. It chills up my spine, or at least I thought it did. It might have actually been my phone buzzing in my pocket. Okay, so we're talking about the Supergirl movie, the new one, which has come out a year after the Superman movie, so all part of the now... Of the DC universe.
The James Gunn universe.
Yep, the Saffron Gunn one. Rebranded once again. Oh, okay, so it's directed by Craig Gillespie.
Aussie.
Australian-American filmmaker. Done a lot of commercials. Video, music videos and so on. Did Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah, I liked that.
Good film. And Fright Night in 2011.
I like that too.
Yeah. I, Tonya, haven't seen that.
I enjoy, it's good. It's very good.
And Cruella, which I thought was excellent.
Cruella is, I was like, we don't need this movie. And then I saw it and I was like, this was so fun. It was really well done.
Yeah. Especially lent into the procedural of the costuming.
Yeah. It was a really wonderful, like the fashion in it was great. And Emma Stone, obviously, impeccable.
Done a bunch of stuff on TV too. I think he did episodes of United States of Tara.
Oh, nice.
Hmm. So actually, after being... born and raised in Sydney. He moved to New York at about 19 and studied graphic design, illustration, advertising at the Manhattan School of Visual Arts. So, you know, he's got chops, this guy, to do this.
I like his stuff.
And the film, the script is written by Anna Noguera, American actress, screenwriter, playwright as well. She played Sarah in a show called Sarah and Dee. And she was in The Vampire Diaries as a character called Penny Ayres. And in the original workshop production of Hamilton, she originated the role of Eliza Hamilton.
Oh, okay. That one I know.
She's written several plays and is now collaborating with James Gunn.
Nice.
So writing several films. Her name is penciled under... A Teen Titans film, which makes sense since she's doing Supergirl, and also an untitled Wonder Woman film.
Oh, okay, so she's really in there crafting this new universe we're going to see.
Mm. So, this Supergirl appeared at the end of James Gunn's recent Superman movie. Mm-hmm. Oh, spoiler.
You've had time.
Yeah, first of the new DCU films, so it's no longer DC Extended Universe, it's DCU. She rolled in drunk and chaotic to Superman's Fortress of Solitude to thank Big Blue for looking after her equally ungovernable dog, Crypto.
Very cute.
It's a side note here. Originally in the comics, Kara had a cat called Streaky.
Oh, okay.
I suspect that the feline space is kind of owned on screen at the moment by Carol Danvers' Flurkin Goose. Yeah. So Kara has a dog.
Yeah.
A whole lot of this movie's plot is inspired by Woman of Tomorrow, an 8-issue comic book written... by Tom King with art by Bill Queer Avely. And this has been kind of adapted loosely to the movie.
Okay.
So where do we start with this? Kara is bumming around space in a small starship with Crypto. It's her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And she's celebrating by going on an interstellar pub crawl. She ends up on a planet with a red sun, like the homeworld of Krypton. Mostly, but not completely, this... Red Sun removes her superpowers. So the alcohol can do its thing. That's why she's there.
Yeah. I mean, which we saw at the end of Superman. Yeah. So we kind of know this is her jam.
So she has a starship because you need somewhere to hang your cape.
Yep.
But she also needs it so she can get off the planet easily because once she gets there, she can't fly.
Right.
Though she can always catch a space bus.
Oh.
So there's that. While she's there, a young girl, Rufy, seeks vengeance for her father's murder at the hands of a bandit leader named Krem.
Okay.
And before you can say True Grit, she is pestering Kara to take her with her so she can pursue and kill Krem. And why should Kara take on this vengeful waif? Because while stealing Kara's starship, Krem shot and poisoned Crypto.
Okay.
Who only has 3 days to live.
Oh, not the dog.
Yes, the dog. Unless he gets the antidote, which Krem has on his person.
Mm.
There's a standard PSA warning here for 0G.
Mm.
Probably unnecessary. A fictional dog is harmed at the start of this movie. In fact, this was a CGI dog. But if you think that they're going to kill off Crypto this early in the new DCU, I have an overlarge metal globe atop the Daily Planet building I can get you for a discount.
So it's going to be used as a plot device.
No serious jeopardy here. And I actually objected to the plot device because it means that Crypto gets bookmarked at the start.
And we don't get to see him.
Yeah. And I really like Crypto.
Me too. Even though he's clearly CGI, he's fun.
Sometimes doubled by a dog, a real dog, all based upon Gunny's... dog Ozu.
Yeah.
Anyway, It is the second film in the DC universe, so they've got some things to set up. Mostly, I feel like it's sort of set outside of where they actually are.
Yeah.
But it gives you a good idea that the universe is a knockabout place.
Lots of
planets easily reached.
Yeah.
A bit seedy in places. Yeah. A bit Guardians of the Galaxy, no doubt.
Yeah. So we're seeing like Superman set on Earth about his story, whereas this is very much like we're going to give you a glimpse of what else is out there.
Yeah. So we got Millie Alcock, another Australian talent, playing Kara Zor-El / Supergirl.
Yep.
She was born in 2000, so she's actually like 26. She was in a show called Wonderland on Network 10, and probably most known for playing young Rhaenyra Targaryen in House of the Dragon.
Yep.
She also has been in a showcase drama called Fighting Season, a series called A Place to Call Home, Pine Gap, which is a Netflix series, and her first feature film was called The School. And she's done West End productions and other bits and pieces. So how does she play this? Well, not just as a female reflection of Superman, which we are grateful. A little bit Tank Girl.
Ooh, fun. Yeah. Okay, a little scrappy.
Yep. A little bit any drifting Western gunslinger who's got an alcohol problem.
Yep. Drowning of Sorrows, etc.
Yep. She did not grow up in sunlit Kansas.
So she doesn't have that solid family foundation that Clark has.
She's born in a dying space colony in a force field bubble.
Yeah, okay. So vibes are very different there.
Yeah. I think she's fine. A Supergirl, I could see her playing the character for much longer than this, until she gets to be Superwoman, which they do comment about.
Well, I guess too, like Supergirl, and she's young, right? Like it's kind of a young girl approach to the character.
Yeah. You got that whole riot girl sort of thing. And in fact, she swans around most of the time in an overcoat and a blondie T-shirt. In fact, they use blondie in the trailer. Which we will probably get around to playing later on. So I think she's pretty much note perfect for this interpretation of Supergirl.
Yes. Yeah.
If she could, I don't want to actually see her get to the stage where she's significantly less cynical and less world weary at that young age, which is an interesting combination. As she says, Superman sees the good in everybody. She sees the truth.
Ooh, I guess that's it, right? The contrast between, David Corenswet's Superman is very, sunny and, he's got darkness in him, but his whole vibe is quite...
He's a nerd.
Yeah, he's like a nerd. He's grown up. He's just like a country boy, good vibes. So I think it is interesting and cool to have sort of a different contrasting approach from...
Mm. So, I think she does fine with this, and she has a good working relationship with Eve Ridley, who plays Ruffy Knoll, or Knoll. She's the young girl who recruits Supergirl on her.
Is she big in the story? Like, is she a big key part of things?
Yes and no. She's part of the MacGuffin that drives the plot. But she is also important because she actually seems to be a bit more cluey than Kara.
Mm.
Well, at least Kara when she's not sober. So she's there to actually help Kara come of age as well.
Right.
Plus she keys into another facet of the plot, which I'll get to in the moment. Now, Eve Ridley got the prestige role of having a voice role in Peppa Pig.
Oh, cute.
She was... in the Netflix science fiction series Three Body Problem.
Oh.
Where she was one of the followers.
Got it.
She voiced Princess Delfina in the animated series Isadora Moon and was in the fourth season of The Witcher.
Oh, okay.
Playing young Nimue.
So she's got some chops in genre biz.
I look forward to hearing her in Blue-Eyed Samurai, where she's got a role in the second season. Right, now, she's got an even darker backstory than Kara. She saw her parents and brother murdered before her home burned to the ground. She seems wiser than Kara, but she's also not. She's just a kid.
Yeah.
And she is definitely along for the road trip.
Right.
Hijacked a little along the way by side quests. But not too many because the clock is ticking.
Yes, of course.
Who else we got? Matthias... Shonart's Dutch actor playing Krem of the Yellow Hills, leader of the brigands.
Okay.
Also, we've seen him before in Red Sparrow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Jennifer Lawrence spy movie. Thing. And he was Django in a Western television series, which I haven't actually seen, but I might look up now. And most recently, I saw him in the Old Guard movies where he plays the character of Booker.
Yeah, okay. Is he covered up in makeup and stuff?
Yeah, he's got so many facial studs on him and he gets around in leather armour, you know, your standard sort of Mad Max.
Yeah, so we're definitely barbarian. Like cantina vibes.
Oh, and, yeah. You know, if you put Mandalorian in this.
Yeah, a bit Firefly, a little bit Star Wars. Okay.
Yeah, and Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah,
and,
okay. Yeah.
Much like the bandit chief in Magnificent Seven, the actor hasn't got too much room to work with. And quite honestly, he's there to be despised because one of the things, referring back to the younger girl actress, they're kidnapping young women to be their brides. Yeah, it's actually quite evil.
Yeah.
But he plays it with the room that he's given, he plays it a bit jauntily.
Okay.
You know, that I'm just a guy, you know, let's sit down.
This is my job.
Have a bit of a job, a chat before the ultra-violence.
Yeah, okay.
You know, despicable character, but, you know, as well played as he can manage within the constraints of the movie.
Yeah, got it.
We talked about David playing Clark Kent in this again. He's not really there for much.
Okay. Well, a shame. I do really like his Superman.
Yeah, yeah. He's got this... He's like the older brother character in this.
But maybe a little bit exasperated.
But I think he's actually younger in some terms because of Kara's being...
She's had a hard...
Yeah, being off in space and space-timey, whimey stuff. And
he's a little more naive maybe.
Yeah. Also, we've got obviously Jason Momoa playing Lobo, the alien mercenary, assassin, bounty hunter who... came from a utopian planet where I think he killed everybody. It's a whole horrible thing. Of course, he was Aquaman in the previous Earth.
DC biz.
Yeah. He's playing this like a thug with style.
Okay.
Not much style, but still some. We don't see as much of him on the screen as I thought we were going to.
I didn't even know he was in this.
Yeah. Oh, I spoiled it for you. I'm sorry.
No. They haven't been pushing that he's in it, I guess.
He's sort of like Wolverine without the claws in this, but with a chain and a motorbike.
he's a bad guy.
I don't know the character much because I don't read a lot of DC comics now, so I can't really say if he nails it or not. Certainly nails a lot of other things on the set. He seems to be impressed with Riffy's revenge arc.
Okay.
Or amused, a bit of both.
Sure. Respects it.
Yeah, he's sort of there for some grim comic relief at stages. And for when you need somebody else to kick ass, which you don't really need in a movie with Supergirl, for gosh sake. Yeah,
because she has power, because they're going hopping about the universe. She has her powers or whatever.
Yeah, speaking of that, the photonucleic effect, yes, there is one, about what suns do to Kryptonian biology, different coloured suns. I often wondered why they can't be duplicated with a sun lamp or something.
Yeah.
it doesn't quite work that way. It's more complex
physics,
than that.
Blah, blah, blah.
But pay attention to the solar class titles that they put on the location overlays when they go from different planets because that's important.
In
this context. There's a lot of fighting in this film.
Yeah, okay. Lots of action.
Yeah. Mostly chaotic, but I feel like the stunt people and the choreographers have picked out Kara's moves quite well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of slide outs. I love it when she slides out. She's going, you know, top speed and then she skids and
fun.
Does a roundhouse kick or a punch and it looks really good all that. Bit chaotic, but that's the nature of the environment that she's in. And when she uses her powers, like the heat vision, that's so cool. You know, and why would you put a hood upon somebody to take them to a secret location when they've got X-ray vision? Oh, dear. So, there's a bunch of other people who appear in the film. Obviously, there's lots of pirates and space raiders and stuff. Particularly funny little group who attack a space bus at some stage and they're tech pirates.
Okay.
And there's a nice little teleport fight. Not as well staged as the one in the Marvels, which had
That was great.
Which was used to advance the plot.
Yeah.
But it's still a fun little bit. So, you know, you've got Seth Rogen making a voice cameo at one stage. It's a very lived-in, gritty sort of universe, and I think DC needs that.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Is there comedy?
Yeah, there's lots of little
bits and quips and things.
Yeah, Kara is quite a comic sort of person.
Like a little Buffy-ish?
A little bit, but I feel like it's a little bit like Drunken Master, actually.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
So, yeah, it's an odd film. It's an odd tone film.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like the film that you'd automatically go to after Superman.
Yes.
But you know what? I kind of respect that. You know, we're not going to go Superman, Batman.
Not the easy win in a way.
Yeah, it's an offbeat sort of one. Mm. And you know, in the last gasps of the DCEU, you know, like there was Blue Beetle.
Yes. Gosh, that got lost, didn't it?
Yeah. But that's what I feel about this one. It's not the film that you thought you would have, but it is the film that you deserve. Something like that.
But you enjoyed it?
I did.
Okay.
It was, look, I saw it on a Sunday arvo, and it was the sort of film I wanted to see on a Sunday arvo.
Yes.
So I don't think it's a blockbuster.
Yeah.
I don't think it's doing anywhere near good business at the box office. Mm-hmm. But that's not my problem. I didn't make the film. I'm not getting dividends from it. Supergirl. I think it's an okay superhero movie.
Yeah.
And a good introduction to the character who's different from previous incarnations of Supergirl. Lots of music we could play. Let's give you a, what have we got here? Supergirl original motion picture soundtrack.
Nice.
Claudia Sahn. Ah. Did the music for this. And I, unless I miss my guess, I think she may be the first woman to actually score a whole DC movie.
Yeah, amazing.
So,
good.
Yeah.
Hi there, I'm Jen Soska.
And I'm Sylvia Soska.
And we're the Twisted Twins, and you're listening to Zero G on 3RRFM.
Did you love it?
Was it good for you too?
Heck yeah.
Claudia Sahn there with Supergirl from the movie. Lots of needle drops in that movie.
Yeah, I bet.
But it does actually have a pretty solid soundtrack as well.
Nice.
But we'll go out with a needle drop from the teaser trailer for Supergirl, which is Blondie, and seeing as how Kara gets around in a Blondie T-shirt a lot of the time.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it actually symbolises what she is. They were going to put in Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Mm. But different tone, though.
Yeah, I feel like it's not quite the right tone for it. That's a little bit too kick-ass, the movie sort of feeling. Joe Brunetic coming up next with Astral Glamour, and this is, of course, Call Me. From Blondie Auto American soundtrack album. Until next week, truth, justice, and whatever. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Rob.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R's Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.